are now hearing that Reince Priebus has been chosen as the next chief of staff for the president-elect and his administration.
Certainly a cautious choice to be making. The fact that Trump is picking someone who's so plugged in to the D.C. Republican establishment tells us, I think, that he wants someone who's a weathered Washington hand to be there, perhaps to balance out his inexperience.
Donald Trump's much-talked-about wall could end up a mere fence, a double-sided fence to be exact, lining America's southern border with Mexico. The problem, they say, is that a real wall doesn't actually make much sense.
A wall would actually be less safe for Border Patrol agents who need to be able to see through to see what's coming toward them. A fence obviously allows them to do this.
Goldman Sachs, a stalwart of the London banking scene, but for how much longer? The US investment bank is rumored to be considering moving some assets to Frankfurt as a way around Brexit. Moving to Frankfurt would put Goldman's assets under the supervision of the ECB, allowing them to carry on as normal.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Monday, November 14th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business week, another business day here on 720 WGN. Lots to talk about today. You ever give out gift cards and give them to, well, all kinds of people, different groups of people? There's a new study out that says you might be wary about who you give them to. In our next segment, we'll tell you about that, about the groups of people that you need to be wary about giving gift cards to. Also, the very latest that you need to know on gift cards. Do they have expiration dates? Can you refill them? Can you check them? In our next segment. In our CEO spotlight coming up, a local Chicago group that's helping pregnant moms, to-be moms, have all the information they need at their fingertips, running a sort of a community online, the Bump Club and Beyond CEO in our spotlight this morning. But first, on the WGN Market Desk this morning, sponsored by Associated Bank, Dow futures are pointing up this morning, about 81 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Crude oil is trading down, silver trading down as well. Crude oil, by the way, at $43.23 a barrel. World markets generally higher today, except in Asia, where most of the indices are lower. The Nikkei is up about 2 percentage points. Everything else is off significantly. In some news that you need to know this morning as we move forward into this business day, you heard there in the opening segment, we're getting a look at some of Trump's potential cabinet members and choices. Some of them we expected were leaked over the weekend. The chief of staff, Reince Priebus, of the GOP party head, is now going to run things at the White House, apparently. Still some questions about this report we heard about him actually giving some cabinet positions to his kids. That still has to be shaken out just a little bit. Not sure if that's true or not yet. Again, lots of things leaking out of the White House, the new White House elect, we should say, as we move into the beginning of this first part of the week. The European Central Bank, its president Mario Draghi, Donald Trump's unexpected election victory has complicated an impending day of decision on whether to expand monetary stimulus efforts. The ECB has also avoided giving a clear signal on the future of its $1.7 trillion bond buying program, which pumps about 80 million euros into the newly created money into the economy there. The question remains, will the Federal Reserve raise interest rates in December? All of those will be questions we'll be focusing on as we move into the week. The best resources and the best events is how Bump Club and Beyond bills itself, curating, it says, the best information and advice from the nation's top experts and partners of the most trusted brands in parenting space. Lindsay Pinchuk is the CEO of Bump Club and Beyond, based in Chicago. She's with us in the CEO spotlight this morning. Lindsay, first of all, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning. Give us a sense of what you're happy about these days, big successes by Bump Club and Beyond that you're proud of.
I am happy that we are connecting women, moms, their families, moms-to-be with each other. That is really my mission and what my mission was when I started this. I was pregnant when I decided that I needed some pregnant friends. And, I took a big leap and I wasn't quite sure that people were going to want to connect before they had kids. There's a lot of resources out there for parents, not so many for expectant parents. So my whole mission is to connect these women with the best experts and products and resources and with each other. And I was telling someone the other day, if you come to Bump Club and you win a stroller, it's kind of the cherry on top. I really want you to go home with people's phone numbers and email addresses and start a playgroup so that you have support.
And if you don't have women in your life, or you're not married and you're not thinking about having kids, and or maybe just a little dense, Bump Club is the baby bump.
Yes.
That's what that means. So
yes.
We just want to get that out. Why did you do this? Why did you create this?
Originally, I had a friend who was pregnant, and I actually had about three friends who were pregnant at the same time, and I was not quite there yet. I was married. We were about to go to Argentina kind of for our last trip before we decided to have a family. And one of my friends said to me, she kept asking me what my other friends were doing and what they were registering for. And I said, we need to get you some pregnant friends. Like, I'm not there yet. I'm not in this mindset. And I knew that there was just a business behind it. I knew that there had to be something. People are always pregnant. It's a life stage. It's never going away. And so I started doing some research, and there really was nowhere for women to connect before they had their baby. And also to connect with the information that you would find in the hospital, but in a more fun and social way. And so we went to Argentina, and I took my computer, and I started building a very basic website. And when I came back, about a month later, I got pregnant. And I knew that I was going to want friends who were also experiencing this with me. And at the time, none of my immediate closest friends were pregnant. That was kind of the big catalyst behind it.
So let's talk about what happened before Bump Club. Women talked to each other, I guess, sort of if they saw each other, or maybe it was mom or mother-in-law or stone tablets, or how did they get the information they wanted?
I think a lot of people would get the information, like, educationally from their hospitals and their OBGYNs, and I don't necessarily think that the community focus was as much there. But interestingly, when I started Bump Club, there were no business Facebook pages. So things have changed in the social media landscape as well. So as I've been building my business, we've seen a rise of Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all of these other ways for people to connect. In fact, there is a group of moms that met at Bump Club. They were pregnant when I was pregnant. Their babies are a little, they're now all six, but they're a little bit younger than my first. And they started a Facebook group to kind of make playdates with one another here in Chicago. And that Facebook group of 20 moms who met at Bump Club is now like over 10,000. And it's a closed group that, you know, women are very community focused, asking each other questions. And that's kind of has taken off alongside what we've been doing both in person and online.
You took the big leap that a lot of entrepreneurs take. You left a full-time job as an ad exec to do this. Talk to me about that process and how scary it might have been.
It was a very scary process. When I was running Bump Club, I started it. It was March of 2010, and I was pregnant. And I had my first daughter in October. And when I first was pregnant, I had a boss who was a father of five and was very family-focused. And that changed before I left for maternity leave. My boss, the woman who became my boss, wasn't as family-focused. And I was very nervous to call her up when I was on maternity leave and originally say to her, I'd really like some flexibility. A lot of women in the advertising community have a day at home on Monday or Friday or have a part-time schedule. And when I called her up, she immediately shut me down. And, you know, I took a step back, and I knew that I was one of her top performers. And I looked at my husband and I said to him, you know what? There are going to be ad jobs, and this opportunity is not going to be here forever. I've gotten a lot done on maternity leave for Bump Club. Let's see what happens. And I went back in and I quit, and the rest is history.
It was a good background, though, to have. How did the background in advertising and marketing prepare you for what was ahead?
Oh, for everything I do with Bump Club is from my advertising and marketing and my integrated marketing background. So, I mean, everything we do, from database segmentation to just marketing on Facebook and calling on sponsors. I was an ad sales executive, so I was selling programs to big, you know, major companies, many of whom I'm working with right now. So,
what were the difficulties and what were the easy parts?
I think that the easy part was really just reaching out to the big brands and getting in front of them. I knew how to do that. That was second nature to me. I'd been doing that for a decade. I was working for big brands, both at Hearst magazines and MTV networks. So using that background and those contacts were a great catalyst for, you know, getting in front of people and getting them to trust me with their advertising dollars. I think the biggest challenge has been just the change in the landscape in terms of social media, and also how this life stage has changed. So I am not considered a millennial. I think I'm on the cusp of being a millennial. But, you know, moms now, 6 years later, are very different than even when I was first pregnant. And so it's continuously reinventing ourselves to make sure that we're reaching the moms to be that are out there. A big part of when we first started, we worked a lot with maternity boutiques because naturally when a woman is 13 weeks pregnant, they need new pants. So they go to a maternity boutique. Many of those independent maternity boutiques that we worked with don't exist anymore. The landscape of shopping has changed and consumer habits have changed. So it's really staying up to date with that and making sure that we're still relevant regardless.
People, as they gauge the success of a company like yours, an operation like yours, will say, okay, subscribers, and how do you make money?
So we make money a couple of different ways. We make money through advertisers and sponsorships. I think a big thing to note about that is not anyone can just advertise with us. I've taken great lengths to protect ourselves and make sure that the brands that we align ourselves with are brands that I believe in and that I trust and that I have no problem putting in front of a large audience of over, you know, 150,000 women now. We also make money from ticket sales. So some of our events have ticketed. You have to buy a ticket to come to them. Some of them are free. It just kind of depends what the event is and who's sponsoring it. We make money from our VIP Parent Perk program, which is a loyalty program that you can sign up one time to be a part of and gain access to a curated list of discounts and gift cards and special events just for our VIPs. And then with the other part of your question.
Well, you answered both of it. You said 150,000 people. That's
yes.
Your subscriber base now?
So our subscriber database in our email is about 100,000. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to know who's in our database and who's on social media and who overlaps.
Right.
I mean, Facebook, we're encroaching 100,000 right now, too. And Instagram, we're just under 20,000. So it's kind of people interact with us at different touch points. And it's not always accurate to know who's duplicate.
So out of those 100,000, 150,000, how many are currently have the bump? And after the bump becomes a baby, do they stick around?
Yes, they do stick around. So when I started Bump Club, originally it was called Bump Club Chicago, and it was only for expectant moms. And 6 weeks after I had my daughter Jordan, all these moms who were having their babies were emailing me, and they were like, well, what's next? I mean, we have all these questions. We have kids who don't sleep. Like, we don't know what to do with breastfeeding. We don't know when to start feeding them solids. So we started hosting events for moms. And it was right after Jordan was born. 5 weeks later, I had my first mom event. And since then, anything that kind of myself and my peers have needed, we've added to the repertoire. So we have events on discipline. We have events on going to kindergarten, finding schools. We have big family events for Halloween and for the holidays. And we have a big birthday party every spring. So we've definitely grown with our audience. And people do continue to come with us. I would say rule of thumb, about 30% is pregnant at any given time. And that's just based off of various surveys that we've done over the course of time.
You're the CEO and founder. Have you grown in terms of staff as well? What has that been like?
I have. So I have an amazing employee, Erin, who has been with me along the way since basically the second year. She started for me part-time out of grad school. She was looking for a job, and I said, I need someone to help me run errands. And since then, she is my director of events, and she's amazing. I couldn't do this without her. But we also have an assistant in our office now and a marketing manager who are also equally as important to our team. We have some contractors that help us with PR and social media, and then we have a couple of salespeople. So I would say about 10 employees.
As a female CEO, you're sort of a rarity. We've been talking a lot about this in the opening bell about how so few women are in boardrooms. The election of perhaps the first woman president. All of this is sort of happening at a time when there has been a call for more. Talk to me about that landscape. How would you like to see that change, and how important has it been for a female to be running for president?
So how would I like that to change? I obviously would like to see more women at the top of companies. I mean, I think that I think that we understand what our employees need, and my whole team is built of women, not on purpose per se. It's not that I wouldn't hire a male. Of course I would. Actually, my business manager is a man. So he's our token guy. I definitely would like to see more women in CEO positions and at the top position. And in terms of a woman president, I think, you know, finally here we are, and we're hopefully going to be breaking the glass ceiling on that. And I think that when it comes to moms, regardless of position and whatnot, moms run the world. And I say that with I'm definitive about that. And if you don't have someone at the top who understands that, it's just not going to work.
That is the secret sauce of a female CEO. Is that it's explain to maybe our audience who doesn't know what the difference is between a female CEO and a male CEO.
Well, the difference. Well, I think if a female CEO is a mom, I've been lucky enough to surround myself with many women entrepreneurs and many women CEOs. I have a group that I meet with on a regular basis, and just we share stories and we brainstorm and whatnot. Moms are the best multitaskers that you could ever imagine, and not saying that a male CEO can't multitask, but we were talking about this before the show, actually. Last night, my kid could have been up throwing up all over me, and I could have been all up all night with her. And guess what? I'm still going to get dressed and go to work tomorrow and take my kids to and from school if they need to be while I'm on the phone taking a conference call. And that's just me, and that's how I get things done. And I know many women CEOs are also constantly multitasking and doing many things at the same time. Not to say men can't. I just think we do it better, and I do.
The political season brought out the worst of both of the candidates, and it sort of highlighted this, the boys' club, what goes on in boardrooms and locker rooms. That whole attitude would change if there were more women in charge, wouldn't it?
I would hope so. I really would hope so. I think that women can do things just as good, if not better, sometimes than their male counterparts. And I just think that we need to have a better respect for one another and just the equality across the board. I mean, we can all do the same things, and mm-hmm. I think that hopefully that'll change.
Well, and too, you can add in minorities, other, immigrants, Latinos. All of these ideas, I always say you're missing out on the potential for all of those other ideas that you're sort of excluding to help grow your business, to help make money, to help have a better product, a better company.
Absolutely. I mean, I am across the board. We work with everybody, all races and ethnicities. And I think that women also, in general, and I'm being very general when I say this, because I have seen some of the worst in women throughout this election season as well, that I can't believe sometimes that I see some of the things that are being said. But I think that women are a little more tolerant sometimes.
So what's next for the Bump Club and beyond?
What's next for Bump Club? So we're preparing for a big 2017. We do a big event series with Target. We did it in 4 cities this year, and next year we're going to be doing it in 16. Gearpalooza, which is our big event series that we do in multiple cities, we will be doing it bigger in about 15 cities next year. We have a couple of new cities we're going to announce. We're very excited about. Can't announce them yet, though. And then hopefully we'll be continuing our partnership with Nordstrom and The Honest Company and some of the big brands that we've been working with to produce events for this year.
Lindsay, very good meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too.
Best of luck with the Bump Club.
Thank you so much.
Lindsay Pinchuk, the CEO, founder of Bump Club and Beyond in Chicago. You can follow along on Twitter @BumpClubBeyond and find them online at BumpClubAndBeyond.com. bumpclubandbeyond.com. Again, Bump Club and Beyond in the CEO Spotlight today, Lindsay Pinchuk. You can listen to more of our interview with Lindsay after the bell. We'll continue our discussion and post it online at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. And you can listen to all of our other CEO Spotlights there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 540. It's the holidays. They're here, and Americans like to give gift cards. But some people in that gift-giving group don't like to receive them. A new report by Bankrate.com sheds a little light on this. Says about half of consumers plan to give gift cards this holiday season. Only about 27% of Americans hope to receive them. And joining us from Bankrate is Mike Cetera. He's one of the experts who did this survey. Mike, first of all, thanks for being with us on the opening bell. So what did you find about these gift cards, and why should we all be a little bit nervous about this?
Well, there's sort of two competing things going on right now. We have people, when they're asked if they're going to buy a gift card for someone during the holidays, half of all American adults say, yes, that's going to happen. But then when you turn around and ask the same people, hey, what kind of gift would you like to get? Only 27% name a gift card as their number one choice. So they think it's a good thing to hand out, but on the receiving end, they're not so sure.
Are you seeing anything in terms of demographics here involved? Is it older people versus younger people, or all over the board?
I think it is all over the board, but I think there are actually a couple of surprising things here. One is when you look at older baby boomers, 62 to 70 years old. They are actually the least likely age group to want an actual tangible gift, which is a little surprising, I think. They're the ones that want the gift cards, which is not necessarily what you would associate with that age group. And then when you go all the way back down the spectrum to the very youngest adults, and we're talking about people who are 18 to 25, they are both the most likely to want a gift card and also the most likely to want a present. So that sort of speaks to if you have someone in this age group that you're buying a gift for, that speaks to the importance of actually trying to figure out what this person wants.
The results sound like they warrant a study in themselves just to figure out what's going on here. Do you have any sort of idea of what these two different groups are thinking?
I think for millennials, you know, they're sort of bridging a world here where they're getting a lot of their they're investing heavily in mobile gift cards. And they're using it in their everyday experience, so this is something that they're dealing with all the time. So they enjoy that, but I think on the other hand, they, like a lot of other people, love the notion of around the holidays meeting with family and friends and actually having something tangible to open up. That perhaps shows that the recipient has put some good thought into what the gift is, and really kind of shows the recipient, hey, this person really loves and appreciates me. They went to this length to buy something personal.
And I'm betting on the older spectrum, part of it, the older baby boomers, they probably think, you know, I have enough, and you know, if you give me a gift card, that I can kind of choose what I want.
Yeah, and I think that's really. Anyone who enjoys getting a gift card is going to have the reaction of, this will allow me to really name the gift I'm going to get. I'm going to be able to get something very specific that I'm interested in. And when it comes to the older generation, you know, these people, a lot of them already have a lot or all of the physical items they may want. So they're going to want to use gift cards perhaps for experiential things, whether it be going out to dinner or actually using it for the salon or what have you.
So we think of gift cards, we think of the kind of card that you might have to go and get it at a department store or someplace like that and put something on it. But there are all kinds of different cards. They're e-cards. Give us a sense of what's out there and what's available.
So I think it's been really interesting over the last 3 or 4 years to see the diversity of gift cards grow, and it's all being driven by businesses wanting to satisfy their customers more. So as you mentioned, there's e-cards. It's a growing part of the segment. And of the 61 gift cards that we actually studied at Bankrate, we found that about 2/3 are now available as e-cards. And what this allows the consumer to do is You can use that anywhere you want. You don't have to necessarily go into a brick and mortar store. You can load it onto your mobile phone. You can spend it online. It just gives people more flexibility. It's the same thing with, there's even more, in terms of, what retailers are offering. There's now even more sort of security protections, which is another thing that is happening with regard to, companies and businesses realizing that these gift cards are something that people enjoy, so they want to give them more options. So, for example, we have pins being placed on most of these cards now. That's a protective measure for the consumer that when they go online to buy an item on the online store, they have to enter this pin. It is evidence that they have the physical card in their hands, and it is a fraud prevention measure. So these are protections that have been being added to these cards that are making them more consumer friendly.
I think if I got one of those e-cards and I were a millennial, I might even be more offended because you didn't even have to go to the store to get it.
Right. Well, that also speaks to something else. You know, you sort of think about when you think about gift cards. I think a lot of people think that gift cards are kind of a thoughtless gift or a gift that is purchased at the last minute. And one of the things that really surprised us in our study is that that's not necessarily the case. 57% of the people who say they're buying gift cards say that they're buying the gift card because they think that's the best gift for the recipient. Mm-hmm. And they're also not doing it at the last minute. We asked, if you're buying a gift card, when are you going to do this? When are you going to start buying these gift cards? And what we found is that really about 3 in 10 people say they're going to buy their first gift card for the holiday either before Thanksgiving or during that 3-day Black Friday weekend. So this is something that is being planned and is deliberate and is being made as a choice by the gift giver as something that they think the recipient will enjoy.
And some of these gift cards, too, now are you can make them the gift that kind of keeps on giving. They're reloadable, and you can even check online right if they've been used.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the online balance is actually a pretty important feature. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've had a gift card where I've gone in to a store and not used the whole gift card. But there's nothing on the card itself that allows you to go, okay, I had $50 on this card. How much is still on here? So it's a really nice feature to be able to then go home, log into, you know, the business's website and really check that card to see if what the balance is. So, oh, now I know I had $50, I spent some money, and now I have $12 left. But the gift card is still good, and I can, you know, I can now go ahead and use it again. Lots of cards have this option now as well.
And do they have the actual price that's on them? Because as somebody who's given and received gift cards, sometimes they don't have what's actually on them. So you just give somebody a card and they kind of have to guess what's there, or as you said now, be able to go online and check. But that seems to always be like a problem for gift cards.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying when you get a gift card and it doesn't tell you how much it's for. So you don't really know how enthusiastic I should be when I'm thanking the person. But I don't actually know if we're seeing more more cards that specifically have denominations on them. My guess would be that that's probably a cost prohibitive thing for the industry to be doing that all across the board, because if you have a gift card that you can set for any denomination, that's a lot cheaper than having to make gift cards that have $5, $10, $25 on each of them.
Mike, how has it changed in terms of, I know there was a time when some of these cards used to expire and they even had purchase fees on them. Is that still standard, or have those gone away?
So expiration dates are becoming a thing of the past. I'm not going to say there's not cards out there that don't still have expiration dates, but it has declined to such a point that we've actually stopped tracking it. Last year was the last year that we tracked expiration fees or expiration dates. As far as fees go, that has also been declining over the years. It's pretty rare at this point, but there's still a number of cards out there. Again, 13% of the cards that we've tracked still have a purchase fee attached to them. And these are mostly the cards that you can use anywhere. So sort of think of them as the branded cards branded from specific credit card companies, for instance, might carry a fee, but those cards allow you to shop anywhere you want. And the reason you want to watch out for the fee is, if you're buying a $50 gift card for someone and then you have to you know, pay that $4.95 or whatever the fee is going to be, you're really losing some buying power by doing that. You're paying more than what the recipient's actually going to get out of it.
Well, Mike, good survey. Happy holidays to you, and watch out for giving those gift cards.
Thank you so much for your time.
Bankrate analyst Mike Sotero with us. You can read more about this, obviously, at Bankrate.com. And by the way, we asked Mike, his dad's cousin is Peter Sotero of Chicago. Mike from Chicago. So thanks, Mike, for being with us this morning on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program as we check the Associated Bank WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures are a little bit higher than they were a little bit earlier this morning, up about 38 points now. But the NASDAQ futures and the S&P futures have turned negative. Crude oil trading lower as well. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. And good morning, Orient Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We begin this trading week looking back at Friday in the grain market when corn, soybeans, and wheat all closed lower for the day. Soybean futures down 1%. There was concern about weakness in Chinese markets that could limit their purchase of U.S. soybeans. Corn and wheat futures also lower for the day and for the week. We saw the soybeans down 0.3%, corn down 2 1/3%, wheat was down 2.7%, marking the biggest weekly declines for both corn and wheat since late August. Now let's turn to livestock futures. Chicago Mercantile Exchange, pretty good news there. Live cattle futures finished higher for a fourth straight day. December live cattle futures closed $1.10 a hundredweight higher at $105.60. Meanwhile, the hog market went the other way. December hog futures ending the day down 25 cents per hundredweight. Always get some interesting reading when the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City issues its quarterly ag credit survey. And it shows that low commodity prices continued to weigh on the farm sector in that part of the country in the third quarter. At the end of September, cattle prices down 21% from a year ago, hog prices down 14% from a year ago. Corn and wheat prices also down from a week from a year ago. So that's a look at what's happening on this Monday morning. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you too. We now check the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Monday, November 14th. There are no major economic or business reports scheduled for release today. However, tomorrow we have a busy day. The Commerce Department covers October retail sales and also business inventories for September. Also tomorrow, Germany's Federal Statistical Office issues its third quarter growth figure for that economy, Europe's biggest. The Home Depot reports its quarterly financial earnings before the market opens today. Air travel consumer report out today. The Department of Transportation issues its air travel consumer report containing September flight delays, tarmac times, mishandled baggage reports, and consumer complaints. Also today, the National Transportation Safety Board has its most wanted list of transportation safety improvements out a little bit later on today. And the Freedom House launches Freedom on the Net 2016, the latest edition of its annual assessment of internet access, censorship, and internet user rights around the world. Just some of the things on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, November 14th.